This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
In a world made of steel, made of
tribute to Irene Cara, who passed away. What a feeling. Great song. Can't help but starting to tap your feet and wanting to dance to it. She was only 63 years old. Very young. Very young. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy, my friend and partner, Big Ed Davis. Excuse me. We thank you for being with us. It is the last day of November. It is the 30th on a Wednesday. We will be talking in a few minutes with Jake Warner of the Quincy Institute. We're going to talk about China's remarkable street protests over its restrictive zero COVID policy. It's happening all over the place. It seemed to start in Shanghai, but it's not just in Shanghai. It's all over the place. People are starting to rise up in China, so we're going to talk about it. And time is running out for Congress to do something about an impending rail strike that could cripple the economy for Christmas. Big story. We're going to talk about that as well. And oil executives are firing back at the Biden administration, which says the execs have lots of chances to drill here in the U.S. They say, wait a second, that is not true. So we're going to take a look and see who's right. And in our ultimate top 10, I think we got a good one here, the top 10 most dangerous highways, most dangerous roads in America. Let's see how many you have been on when we give you the top 10. So, lots of things going on. Glad to be back. Had a little cold. We had our Thanksgiving break. But we're back. We feel a lot better. And, boy, there's a lot going on right now as we enter the month of December. Congress is under the gun right now to pass legislation that will stop the threat of this rail strike. But time is running out. You know, this is called the lame duck Congress. Why? Because in November, they elected new Congress people who will take office in January. That means the old group is meeting here in December, in late November, for the last time. So a lot of them want to they want to shove through their personal, pork legislation, if they can get away with it, before leaving office. They want to try to ram it through at the end. And this thing, however, the rail strike, is really throwing a wrench into the spokes. If this rail strike occurs, it could be occurring in the next few days. And the question is whether or not, first of all, if Donald Trump was president, I guarantee you, he would force the union and the executives of the railway companies to sit down together, and he would be in the room, and he would have the cameras rolling. But not Biden. And Biden claims to be what? The best friend in the White House that the unions have ever had? Where is he? And then his press secretary claims he's directly involved. Biden himself says he's not directly involved. They don't even get their story straight about that. So Biden said yesterday that if rail work stoppage occurs, some 750,000 Americans could be put out of work in the first 2 weeks alone. Well, isn't that enough incentive, Joe, for you to get into some action here? Force these two to sit down and figure out the last couple of details? Now, the union that represents these carriers, it's the Association of American Railroads, estimates the... I should say that's not the union. That is the group that represents the railroads themselves. Say a rail shutdown could cost us about $2 billion a day. Hell, that's more than you make, Ed. And that's a lot of money to worry about. And just think, you know, going to the food stores and going to do your Christmas shopping. And if the railway strikes on, you know, if we don't get it through the rail, how are we going to get it over to the stores? Because most all of our stuff eventually, you know, if you look back, gets... It has to be put on rail, or at least a goodly part of it does.
Well, we already have problems with the trucking, with restrictions, and of course the diesel fuel prices.
Yeah, I mean everything's coming at a bad time.
And you wonder why he doesn't do either. You know why he doesn't come out on either side? Because when you swim in the middle of the pond, you never take sides.
Yeah. And there are some unions that have agreed to the terms, but there's a couple of holdout unions. Apparently, it's not money. It has to do with sick days.
Right.
Sick leave.
Time off, yes.
Now, you would think that they could figure that one out.
Right.
I mean, are you going to shut down a rail system over a couple of sick days that you either get or don't get? I don't think so. And I don't know why Biden wouldn't force them to get together and figure that out. Biden needs to... I don't know, maybe Biden just can't do it anymore. But he needs to take a more active role.
When you say anymore, when did he do it, period?
Well, at least when he was younger, at least he sounded like he had some cognitive ability to do it. I'm beginning to think he doesn't have the cognitive ability to get involved anymore. Anyway, it's a very, very critical situation. I think most of the so-called experts don't think the strike will occur. And Congress... is supposedly gonna, you know, sit around and talk about it. So we'll see what happens. You see, Congress, which is still made up of, at this point, democratically controlled, the Democrats claim to be pro-union, so they're walking a tightrope too. They don't want to be seen as stomping on the union to help keep the goods, but then if they don't do something to force the unions to stay working, they're going to have everybody else in the country upset, very upset. So anyway, we're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to shift gears. What is going on with this these demonstrations in China over their so-called zero COVID policy? We'll talk with Jake Werner of the Quincy Institute about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Thank you so very much for being with us on this Wednesday, and we're delighted to have Jake Werner join us. Jake is a research fellow, and he specializes, among other things, on East Asia and China. And we brought Jake in to talk a little bit about this, what is a very rare occurrence in China, street demonstrations against the communist government there on this zero COVID policy. Jake, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thanks, glad to be here.
Now, this is really something. It's if I remember correctly, you can correct me on it. These protests over this COVID policy started maybe in Shanghai, but it has spread out into other areas now, correctly? Correct?
So it started in the capital of the western province of Xinjiang, which is called Urumqi.
Okay.
It started over an apartment building fire. It seems that the COVID restrictions prevented firefighters from reaching the fire in a timely fashion, and 10 people ended up dying. And that kind of just set off a wave of, you know, frustration and resentment against the zero COVID policy that swept across the country.
Right. What exactly is, if you could explain it, what is China's zero COVID policy?
Well, essentially, they try to isolate and contain any COVID outbreaks whatsoever. And this involves quite extreme measures, using the very heavy surveillance presence that the state has built up over the last number of years to make sure that anyone who comes into contact with anyone who has tested positive for COVID is forced to quarantine for at least 2 weeks. And sometimes these measures have been implemented in very coercive and brutal fashion. And sometimes people have been stuck in their apartment. And this is not just you have to stay away from people. This is you have to stay inside your apartment. Sometimes people will have the doors to their apartment bolted shut.
Oh, wow.
And so they're stuck in the apartment. And at times it has been hard for them to get food. It certainly has been hard for them, like obviously impossible for them to work. So the kind of intensity of these restrictions has led to a lot of resentment wherever they. I mean, the other side of this is that China has been pretty good at containing the virus, so it hasn't affected that many people until recently. But because the Omicron variant of COVID is much more transmissible, the rates are starting to go up, and it's starting to affect many, many more people. So now about a quarter of the economy is under lockdown right now. And that means that millions and millions of people are being affected by this policy.
Yes, indeed. You know, the Chinese are normally used to being kind of, what would you call it, controlled, you know, by their government. None of them alive today probably remember, you know, before the Mao Zedong situation. So they've been a restrictive country for so many years, and yet it's kind of significant that all of a sudden it's like we're not going to take this anymore. How significant, Jake, do you think that this is? Is this something that's like the Tiananmen Square thing that kind of, you know, came and went? Do you think this might be longer lasting?
I think it's too soon to tell. We'll definitely have to see whether the protests, the protests have been across the country, which is quite unusual, which is completely unusual. It's unprecedented. There actually are quite a few protests in China, but they're always restricted to local issues, like a factory has a dispute or a local official is corrupt and people are protesting against them. That's quite common. But what is unheard of is for protests around a single nationwide issue to break out around the country. And in particular, this is particularly threatening to the Chinese government, to Xi Jinping himself, because this is a signature policy that Xi Jinping has been championing for the last 3 years. So it is very significant, but and they're quite widespread, but the total number of people who have engaged in them remains relatively small. And we haven't seen, there was a, not a crackdown exactly, but a very large police presence has been deployed over the last couple of days to intimidate people from coming back out into the streets. And the protests have died down for the moment. So we don't know where it's going to go here, because the grievances are affecting millions of people. There's a lot of anger out there, and it's not just the COVID policies either. It's also the sense that with Xi Jinping in power, the space for political expression has completely closed down, and there's a lot of anger and despair about that. And you see that also registered in the protesters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People are just for example, people are holding up blank sheets of paper in protest because they're not allowed to say anything.
Yeah.
And so this is a very powerful protest that doesn't fall foul of any regulations exactly, but it does raise the issue to a political level that is quite threatening to the government. So we'll have to see where the protests go before we can judge whether how big a threat it is.
We're talking with Jake Werner. He is a research fellow specializing, among other things, on what goes on in East Asia and China with the Quincy Institute. And here's one of the things that you mentioned, Jake, about this. You said that Washington needs to be very careful in responding to these protests. I believe one of their Biden administration people was asked the other day how Biden and the administration see this situation, and their response seemed somewhat tepid. It was like they didn't want to say everybody has the right to peacefully protest in the world, you know. That was kind of the response. But they didn't really get into any, real strong support of those Chinese protesters.
Yeah, they are being very cautious about it. The issue that they're facing is the Biden administration has been trying to improve the relationship with China has deteriorated really, really substantially over the last 5 years under both Trump and Biden. And the Biden administration has taken a number of moves to restrict China militarily, to sort of undermine its ability to grow economically. That has led to a really sharp deterioration in the reputation of the United States in China. So people are saying, the United States says it stands for democracy, but what it's actually doing is making it harder for us to get jobs, making it harder for us to gain recognition on the international stage. And so the reputation of the United States has really fallen within China. So the danger here is if the administration takes a really strong stance on the protests and really embraces them, the danger is that will discredit the protesters within China. Right, like the United States is supporting these people to undermine China. That's the argument that the government is going to make, and the question is whether it's going to have any traction. So the approach that the Biden administration has been taking, I think, is a wise one, given the circumstances, because you don't want to undermine the protesters any more than is necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's an interesting, a survivor of Mao Zedong's communist revolution was making the rounds on TV yesterday, and she's warning that the Chinese Party, Communist Party, will use any means necessary to stop this uprising. She said, we're witnessing a watershed moment. She said, during the past 75 years, the Chinese people have put up with so much abuse from the communist government. But she said in the past 3 years, these COVID policies have really brought people, she says, to the breaking point. Do you feel that's true?
I think that is true, but it's also more complicated than that, because while a lot of people are really angry about the COVID restrictions, there are a lot of people who are also really terrified of the disease. And in fact, because the vaccination rate in China is relatively low, particularly amongst older people, there are estimates out there that if the restrictions were to be lifted quickly, that you could see about 600,000 deaths and about 6 million people admitted to intensive care units. So that would be a truly devastating outcome, devastating for the government, but also devastating for the Chinese people. So the Chinese government is facing a really tricky path here. The way that they're responding so far is to signal that they're going to ease the COVID restrictions to a certain degree, on the one hand. On the other hand, making very clear that people should not be protesting. So they haven't, there hasn't been violent crackdowns or shooting of protesters or anything like that. But what they have done is they've put this giant presence of police out in the streets. They've been visiting people who are identified by the surveillance network at home, and warning them not to come back out on the street. They've been stopping people on the street and checking their cell phones and checking to see whether they have illegal apps that could allow them to communicate with other protesters, and then erasing those. So a lot of, there hasn't been like large scale crackdown, sweeping people up in mass arrests. That hasn't happened yet. But what they have been doing is signaling very clearly in ways to intimidate people who might want to protest. And again, we'll have to see if the protesters stick with it, and if they get bigger and they draw in more and more people, then this would be a huge challenge to the government. If the outcome is rather the Chinese government makes some concessions and the protesters decide to stay home, then things could calm down.
Yeah. I mean, now you're even seeing people in China dare say that Xi, the president, should resign. I mean, I don't think I'd want to say that country could be hauled away. But you are hearing people are calling for that, you know, with signs and everything. So they are certainly getting a lot more courageous, it seems like.
Yes, no question. That calling for Xi Jinping to step down is unheard of in China. So that hasn't been the main theme of the protests. But we have heard that slogan at the protest, and that is really something.
It's unprecedented, yeah. My colleague Ed Davis has a question for you, if you don't mind, Jake.
Jake, I was just wondering why is the vaccination rate so low there? I mean, is the product not there, or are they just waiting on Biden to go over there and say we've been patient and we're not going to wait much longer? I mean, it worked so well over here.
A couple issues here. Because up until this point, the COVID restrictions have been really effective. A lot of people just feel like it's not a danger, and they haven't, you know, they're a little suspicious about the vaccine, and they're like, well, if I'm not really in any danger because the transmission rates are extremely low, then I'm not going to get it. The second issue is that the Chinese government has refused to import foreign vaccines. And so the vaccines that they use are all domestically produced. And as the data that we have are that the vaccine is effective at preventing death, but is not as effective as the dominant vaccines in the U.S. and most of the rest of the world. And in general, Chinese people are very suspicious about the quality of vaccines that are domestically produced, because there's been a number of scandals about, the quality of Chinese-produced vaccines. So people are suspicious about Chinese-produced vaccines, and then they want to avoid it. So you have that set of circumstances, and it's made it particularly difficult to get older people vaccinated.
That's a very interesting situation. You know, the other thing, too, is that they have continued to stifle any probe into what started out and what caused this outbreak, this COVID outbreak. They will not allow any in-depth, you know, anybody to come in and take a look. They're such a closed society. I don't know. It's very interesting that the people, maybe people, you know, because of the internet now, all of these Chinese people, you know, are wandering around with their iPhones. So they have access now to information, don't they? Or is China able to stifle even the internet to such an extent that they don't get any real outside information?
It really varies. There are ways of getting around the censorship apparatus over the internet, but the censors are also very good at their job, and so generally those ways around the Great Firewall will get shut down fairly quickly. So just the fact that the protests spread so widely indicates that people are able to talk to each other. But on the other hand, I would, you know, it's hard to make any judgments on this, but I would venture to guess that most people in China are not aware of the protests because the censorship system is so powerful, and because they're not hooked into these ways around the domestic internet restrictions.
Would that be more in the rural areas, do you think, as opposed to, say, the major cities?
Yeah, it's much more likely that people would be getting around the censorship in urban areas, particularly in the richer cities, and also on like college campuses. And this has been a big focus of the protests, as they've broken out at a number of universities around the country.
Wow, Jake, I really appreciate your coming on. This is such an interesting, important topic. I hope we'll be able to talk again down the road.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jake. Jake Werner, Quincy Institute. Okay, we are going to take a break. When we come back, oil executives, they're getting really hot under their collar, you might say, at the Biden administration for saying that the execs have lots of chances to drill here in the U.S. Hey, not so fast, they say. We're going to take a look and see who's right.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is marine wildlife artist and conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
Do you have questions about navigating the confusing world of health insurance? Then just ask Angela. That's right, just ask Angela. Every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Angela will discuss topics such as individual, family, and group health insurance plans, life insurance, original Medicare, supplemental plans, and much, much more. Just ask Angela every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. and visit her website, justaskangela.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on the last day of the month of November. My goodness, the 30th already, and we're going to get right into the Christmas season. Well, private payroll job growth rose slower than expected in this month, November. Evidence that the historically hot labor market is starting to cool off. Now, this is according to ADP. They say the company's added just 127,000 jobs in November, which missed the hopeful 200,000 mark that they had hoped and predicted that they could reach. So the Fed has responded to the inflation crisis and the tight labor market. They've been raising interest rates. Anyway, maybe things are really getting bad, you know? Because the one thing Biden would always say is, well, look at how many people are being hired. You know, we got great employment. Well, all of a sudden, that's slowing down. You knew it would eventually.
There's still a lot of people out there not working.
There is.
You know,
you're right.
One thing over the Black Friday is that people were saying that this year wasn't crazy. You know, that the lines and everything, they weren't there because the economy is tanking. And that's partially true. But the other part is, you didn't see any ads on TV like normally. Like, we opened at midnight Friday or 9 p.m. after you eat your turkey or 3 a.m. They all didn't do that because they don't have the employees. So they all, the playing field this year was leveled into where all the stores basically opened at 6 a.m. because they couldn't open overnight hours. They didn't have the employees to staff the place.
Why do you think, Ed, that they didn't have enough employees? They of their
because,
own choice?
Because
they...
some, no, because they can't hire. I mean, I talked to a manager at Walmart. She's running the cashier line.
Why can't they hire
Why are
people?
You doing? Because they don't want to work.
Okay.
They don't want, if they can make more money staying at home with unemployment the way it is. And she says, I'm running the register because I can't get anybody to
you
work.
You would think that employment, unemployment benefits at this point for a lot of these people would have been run out.
The way she put it, people are still at home getting those checks.
Okay,
that's
well,
the way it's put.
You know, if that's true, you can understand it. It seemed to me, and, you know, it's just me driving down the road, it seemed to me that Friday after Thanksgiving, there was a lot of traffic.
Yeah, sure, there was traffic because everybody was on the road at the same time.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, for shopping, didn't you think it was a busy day?
But you didn't see people camping out at Best Buy two nights before.
No, that's true.
Because all the stores were opening up at the same time.
Yeah, and I don't think they have the sales quite like they used to, right?
Well,
or do they?
And a lot of online shopping, too.
That's true.
Very big on
what about
Cyber Monday.
Amazon strike? There's another problem going
well,
on.
Well, that's in other countries that they're complaining.
Oh,
they're
it's not,
not
here?
No, it's not here.
Okay. So we'll still see those strange-looking Amazon trucks driving down the road.
If they're delivering, yeah. I mean, I can't knock it. I yeah. can't knock it because,
no.
listen, when I want something, I go to a store and it says, we can order it from our warehouse. Well, I must get Amazon to do that.
Exactly. Oh, no. I mean,
you know, the days of running to Radio Shack to get a transistor is gone.
That's true.
You know?
It's been great. It's absolutely turned the whole idea of purchasing on its head. Much to, I guess, to the fear of a lot of these box stores, you know? But that's progress. Okay. So... after the White House said that U.S. oil people have plenty of opportunity to drill, some of these executives just like flew off their seats from these oil companies when they heard that. Here is Tom Pyle. He is a representative of the American Energy Alliance. He represents a whole bunch of different oil companies. He says, we've basically tracked about 125 specific actions that the administration and Congress have done to slow down or stop oil production in our country. He says, Biden has an America Last energy policy. Biden already said he wanted to shut down fracking. He said it. He's just come out and said he wants to stop fracking. The first thing he did when he came into office was shut down work on the Keystone Pipeline.
He wants to end drilling, too.
He wants to end drilling. I mean, this idea that all of a sudden the administration is saying, well, you know, there's plenty of oil leases out there for these guys. Not so fast. One of the things is just because you get an oil lease, it doesn't mean you're going to get oil. And they've got all kinds of bureaucratic red tape on getting the
oil on those licenses, yes. And most of those licenses were issued by the Trump administration, and Biden is the one that imposed the restrictions on them.
Yeah, it's very frustrating to see what we're doing, and then going to Venezuela and Saudi Arabia, hat in hand, and begging them to produce more oil.
Venezuela,
so we take their dirty oil rather than our clean burning oil.
I didn't think Biden could top Saudi Arabia until the Venezuela thing came up.
Yeah, it just absolutely drives you crazy when we know we've got the capacity to lead the world.
What is the difference between drilling there and drilling here as far as your green earth goes?
We get more people employed here by drilling. We keep the oil here, which means we're going to lower the price of gasoline. We're going to have more gasoline. We're going to have more people employed. And we're going to have cleaner gasoline, cleaner fuel, because we, unlike Venezuela in particular, we kind of, you know, are much more wary of pollution and all of those things. So,
and I'll tell you, those people that are bragging about the electric cars or whatever, people that own electric cars, I can almost guarantee you that each household has at least one fossil fuel car.
Yeah.
At least one.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing we don't think about is, do you know how much, how bad it would be if we started banning fossil fuels for agriculture? You know, for all of the fertilizer that we have to make? I mean, people don't realize what would happen. And then the diesel fuel problem, right? And a possible lack of diesel fuel. All of these things that are going on. It's scary.
I mean, when we're using higher ethanol now, subsidizing our corn instead of eating it, we're now having to put it in our tanks,
yeah,
because we can't drill.
Right. Yeah, it's so crazy. You would think that there would be so much pressure. Now, when we get the new Congress coming in, which will be a Republican majority, they're going to push for more deregulation so that these oil companies can actually have it easier to go after the oil that we have in this country. But I wonder if the Senate is going to kibosh it, and or even if the Senate goes along with it, if Biden won't sign it. Because he's beholden to the far left groups that don't want to see us drill. So it's going to be, it'll be kind of interesting to see the tug of war, you know, that'll be going on between those two areas. So we've only got, you know, we still have a couple of these races that haven't been called. My God. When was that? November the 7th or something like that? That we had.
I could have.
It's 23 days later, and they still haven't called.
I could have taken myself and a couple of my buddies and a couple of cases of beer, headed out there and gotten the counting done a hell of a lot faster than they've done. And that's taking breaks.
Yes. So, right now, as it stands, Republicans have a 220-seat majority in the 435-seat House of Representatives. The races that are still going on include the 13th Congressional District of California, where John Duarte, the Republican, has a narrow lead over the Democrat, Adam Gray, with about a 600-vote difference and 99% of the votes counted. But it's so close that they are not able to call that one yet. Now, California is a predominantly vote-by-mail state. You can imagine how many million people are there with all that voting by mail and how long that must be able, you know, that is taking. Every registered voter in California gets a ballot 29 days prior to Election Day. God, I just can imagine what a mess that is. What a mess. Every single voter gets it. Can you imagine how many of those things are going out there that, you know what I mean? I mean, with every single voter supposedly being mailed, all of the problems that entails. California has a total right now of 244,000 ballots that remain to be counted. And then the other place is Colorado, where Republican Lauren Boebert, who is running against Adam Frisch, the Democrat. She is narrowly ahead by 554 votes with 99% of the vote counted. So those are the two races that are still left to call.
Do you remember we had elections in high school?
Yeah.
You had the student council count, and then you had the teacher count. Mm-hmm. And if it all matched up, you did it again just to be sure if it was that close. And by the end of the day, you knew who the class president was. You're telling me that within a couple of days is even outrageous. But in a couple of days, what are we talking now? It's been a month?
That's
almost
right.
A month?
And here in Florida, and what, we're the third largest state now? Here in Florida, we have mail-in voting, and yet we got all of this done virtually by the end of the next day. We all knew what the races were. So we've got it figured out. Now, we've been doing it maybe a little bit longer. And in our case, we don't mail it out to every single person. You only get it if you technically request it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else can go to the polls and, you know, to the precincts and vote. Anyway, Still going on. Still going on. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, among other things, especially if you're going to be driving at Christmas, we are going to give you the top 10 most dangerous highways in the country.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back with the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you so very much for being with us. I know you're busy, especially with Christmas approaching. But we are here, by the way, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Great Tantalk Radio Network, and we love doing it. But maybe you can't listen to us every single time live. So thanks to Big Ed, all you got to do is go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com. He's got all our shows on podcast, on tape. You just go up there, click on the podcast button. It's at the top of the website. And Ed's got all our shows, most recent show at the top. You'll be able to, before you even click on listening, you'll know who the guest is and the topic, and you'll also know what our top 10 is. So we thank Ed for doing that, bless his soul. Just go to ourfreedomworks.com to do that. All right. So, Ed, did you know that Governor DeSantis will be coming out with a book, a kind of an autobiography, in February? The name of the book is The Courage to Be Free, Florida's Blueprint for America's Revival. And supposedly, it will cover key moments in his life from growing up in a working-class family. By the way, he grew up in Dunedin. A lot of people might not know that, here in Dunedin, Florida, just down the road. Did you know he played in the Little League World Series?
Yeah.
Played in the Little League World Series. He worked his way through Yale and Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody gave him anything. Mm-hmm. Then he volunteered for the Navy, went in after 9/11, and he served in Iraq. So he's got a pretty good resume, I'll say. It also will detail his marriage to his wife, Casey, and their children, and also his wife's battle with cancer. So the question is, do you think he's doing this because he's thinking about running for president and something like this will make him a wider known figure? That's what a lot of speculation is right now about that. And there could be some truth to it. He certainly hasn't, what's the word, said, no, I'm never going to run for president.
You never say that.
No, of course you don't. But, I mean, you know, if he wasn't going to run in 2024, don't you think by now he would have said, look, I'm serving out my full term as governor. I'm not going to run in 2024. It'd be in the middle of my governorship.
Yeah, but then, like you said, like we just said, then you're committing yourself not to run.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. He's got an open mind about it, whether he's...
Things could change. I mean, yeah, Trump right now is the guy that they're looking at. What if something, God forbid, happens to Trump?
Yeah. What if even if it doesn't, don't you think that there's going to be pressure from the Republican Party to have DeSantis run?
Well,
there's
yeah.
a lot of fear that Trump is going to be, you know, alienating half the voting.
Well, it's already started. I mean, our wonderful little rag paper here in town has gone out to the villages, and asked people out there, if they ran against each other, who would you vote for? Yeah, would it be Trump or DeSantis?
Yeah, they're trying to get it going. And you're talking about the... They always said the Florida's greatest newspaper, didn't they? The
Good
Tampa Bay
God.
Times. It's more like a pamphlet.
I mean,
it comes out twice a week. Yeah. I go get the paper on Wednesday and Sunday.
It is the
but
most
it ain't what it used to be.
The most predictable paper out there.
Yeah, they vote. They endorsed Charlie Crist. That did them a lot of good.
Well, remember, they were behind Gillum, too. Remember
and they
that?
Were behind Andrew
great,
Gillum.
Great track record.
Yeah, good old Andrew. I wonder, is he out of stir yet,
by the way? I don't know.
God, that guy was, what a mess that guy made of his life, Andrew Gillum. Hey, before we get to our top 10, Ed, since we've been away for a while, I want to catch up on our sports teams. I was watching last night our beloved Tampa Bay Lightning hockey team, which has been playing very well recently. Went up against the Boston Bruins in Boston, and unfortunately were not able to win. I think they lost 4-2 or something like that. But they've been playing relatively well, although they're getting a little longer in the tooth. I think that their goalie, Vasilevsky, may not be as quick as he used to be a couple of years ago, but he's still very, very good.
Well, he's slacking at 28 years old, you know?
Well, I wouldn't say he's slacking. He's still one of the very... He might still be the best player.
I think Boston is going to be the team to beat, probably.
Well, they look like it.
You know, as long as they stay healthy. Yeah.
Very efficient team. I was watching them. They really seem to have it down right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about our beloved Buccaneers? Did we not lose another game?
That's a bad situation.
Yeah, what's going on? How come we're not winning any games here?
That's
what's going
on? That's a bad situation, and it's coaching. It's coming down. I think there could be some sort of a coup going on.
A coup?
I mean, it's that bad. I mean, the players are just...
They're revolting, you think, against their coach.
Yeah.
What's the name of the coach?
Todd Bowles.
How long has he been here? He's not been there that long.
Well, he's you got to remember, Bruce Arians, who was the coach before, is, you know, no risk it, no biscuit, you know, and throw it down the field and let's score 30, 40 points. Todd Bowles is of let's score 17 points and hold them to 16 points.
Mm-hmm.
The old Tony Dungy avenue.
Doesn't,
and it's not fitting with players. It's just not.
Doesn't Tom Brady have the run of deciding what he plays he's going to call?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think so.
Well, that would upset Tom Brady a little
bit. And that's the problem, you know?
Boy, if I were the coach, I would certainly kind of give Tom Brady his head on that one. He, you know, he can figure out, he can just look at a defense as he approaches the quarterback and figure out what kind of a play he wants to call.
You know, guys in the older days called their own plays, for crying out loud. Terry Bradshaw, guys like that, they called their own plays.
If anybody should be able to call
his
own
coach
plays,
the coach had input, but, you know.
Did Bruce Arians, the former coach, allow Brady his head on calling
occasionally,
plays?
Occasionally.
But not completely.
No, not completely.
Okay.
No.
Is there anything else going on these days? I noticed that a lot of college football occurred over the Thanksgiving holiday.
That's winding down now.
That's winding down.
Are you
following who might be playing in the championship games with college football?
Not really. I mean, you know, I'd wait till it gets down to the Final Four.
Georgia is going to be in there.
Georgia will be in there.
Another one that's...
Michigan will be in there.
Yeah, Michigan beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
Did I not read... Is it Texas Christian University that's undefeated? And one of the top four right now?
Yeah,
a team that you
TCU,
never even
yeah.
think about,
yep.
TCU.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting also. And then you got, of course... you got college basketball, which is really starting to steam up. They're going to be starting to play their in-conference games. But if you're a college basketball fan, by the way, got to bust my buttons. That's why I'm wearing my Marquette jersey. Marquette beat sixth-ranked Baylor by 26 points last night. I mean, they blew
them.
That's
a beatdown.
It was a real beatdown, so we're very proud about it. All right, Ed, slide over to the drums, if you will. We have a good one here. And I forgot to check the source, but this is, I think, a very legitimate source, but I don't remember who it is. But they compiled the top 10 most dangerous roads, highways, in the U.S. Let's see, Ed, how many of these highways you've been on, because I think you've been on a few of them. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go. Number 10. The James Dalton Highway in Alaska is number 10. It was built in 74. It goes 414 miles through a wilderness, and mainly for trucks transporting oil. Steep hills and the Yukon River make it very dangerous, okay? And it's a very remote. If you have a crash there, they might not find you for days.
Snow and ice probably didn't help either.
No, it doesn't. All right, number 9. Route 17 in South Carolina, U.S. Nope. Highway 17. Okay. One of the most scenic that you can take, but it's dangerous. Filled with sharp turns, narrow lanes, and a lot of wildlife that lead to a driving hazard as they cross the road.
Too many people looking at the scenery and not watching the road.
Yeah. Number 8. I-285 in Georgia.
I've probably passed through it.
Oh, I've driven it many times. And it is intimidating. At one point, there's like, going in one direction, there's like 6 lanes. Because it starts to merge with I-75.
And don't they have that big wall on each side? You feel like you're like, yeah, you know, boxed in a tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah, you get some of that tunnel thing. But in Georgia, it's called the perimeter, a 64-mile loop that encompasses Atlanta. The road's fatality rate is 3.5 deaths for every 10 miles,
wow,
according to AAA. That's kind of scary. Number 7. It's I-15, which is runs between Nevada and California, 181-mile stretch. Over a 15-year period, one study found it to be the deadliest road in America because drivers speed while going through the Mojave Desert, and they're likely coming or going from the excitement in Las Vegas. One quarter of the crashes involved a drunk driver. Yike. Number 6. I-10 in Arizona. No. It can't be I-10 Arizona. I-10 runs in... I-10, yes, in the Arizona.
Yeah,
Interstate
runs across.
10 starts here in Florida.
Yeah,
goes across. Yeah, that's it. But the stretch in Arizona cuts through the desert, which leads to speeding and aggressive driving. All right, number 5. I'm going to have to hurry up here. I-45 in Texas, extremely congested, named one of the deadliest roads by Budget Direct. Number 4. I-4 in Florida. You and I have both taken I-4 in Florida. We know how dangerous it is. They've tried to fix it up a little bit. It was once the deadliest highway in America with roughly 1.41 deaths per mile.
Well, before they put the wall up in between or the barrier, you know, cars were going across that median and heading in the wrong direction.
Ah, that's the scary sight. And this, of course, runs between Tampa and Orlando, that I-4. Number 3. Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana. It holds the Guinness Book of World Records, by the way, for the longest bridge over water. Did you know that? 24 miles long, but very, very dangerous. Number 2. U.S. Route 1 in Florida. Let's see. That must be on the East Coast. One of the deadliest roads in America. The south end of the highway, known as the Overseas Highway, connects Miami to the Florida Keys. It consists of miles of bridges that many people find unnerving. All right. Number 1, what do you think, Ed? Any guess as to the state?
I don't know.
That's all right. It's the Million Dollar Highway in Colorado.
Wow.
Ever been on that one?
Where's that one at?
Let's see. Winding through Red Mountain Pass in the San Juan Mountains. It climbs 11,000 feet above sea level. And when you mix in the harsh weather, it's one of the most dangerous roads in America. There you go. All right. Thank you so very much. God willing, we will be here on Friday. In the meantime, remember that freedom works.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Steve Kathan. Deadly storms have rolled through parts.